It's high noon in New York and time for Kate Smith, who will be brought to you every Tuesday and Thursday during the summer by the makers of Sure Gel, America's fastest-selling powdered pectin product. Here she is, Kate Smith.
Hello, everybody. Today is a day that no living American can ever forget. Invasion Day, forged into our consciousness in letters of fire. It marks the pinnacle of weeks and months and years of anguished preparation, the consolidating of our mighty forces. This is the hour of the death blow to those, our enemies, who have spread evil, sorrow, and suffering like a black shadow across the face of this earth. This is the day of reckoning, when America and her allies go forward to the terrible task of crushing completely and forever the enemies who for 4.5 years have ravaged one helpless nation after another. This is the day that must mark the beginning of the downfall of Nazi Germany and the downfall of all those who have sanctioned and aided the brief reign of terror, the cruelty, insanity, and arrogance of Hitlerism. Let the blow be swift and sure. Let us be strong and unswerving in purpose, strong in the assurance that we go forward in a cause which is right, in the liberation of the oppressed and the restoration of human decency and dignity from the forces of evil. This is Invasion Day, Liberation Day. Here at home, we sit beside our radios, eagerly hanging on each word of news that flashes across an ocean around the world. We're filled with a conflict of many emotions, fear, excitement, and hope. But these emotions will not help those whom we most desire to help. They will not carry our brave fighting forces forward unless we harness those thoughts and guide them and use their power to forge an invincible weapon against the foe. Today, we cannot afford to stand idly by, scattering our thoughts so haphazardly that they reap only the wind. We must concentrate them on victory and turn our earnest, united thought into devout, unceasing prayer to God. Wherever you are at this moment, whatever you are doing, join your prayers with mine. A prayer for victory. Pray that our crusaders may be strong, that success will crown their every effort. Pray that they may speedily accomplish their mission and bring their adversaries to unconditional surrender. Pray to our Father in heaven to look down with compassion upon this sick and sorrowing world and guide the forces of right against the forces of evil and insanity. If millions of us, every man, woman, and child in America, will lift our fervent prayers to God, those prayers will be answered. You all know the power of faith and prayer. Use that power now. Use it with every fiber of your heart and soul and mind so that your prayers, along with mine, may reach outward and upward to encompass and aid those we love and the cause for which they crusade. Lift up your prayers for victory and for peace to him who said, "Ask, and ye shall receive." And now, Ted, what's new?
Allied invasion forces are storming ashore along northern France this noon, taking the first long step to Berlin from a bridge of ships stretching across the English Channel. And the most important news of the hour, in the words of Prime Minister Churchill, is that operations are proceeding according to plan. Never before in history has the world seen anything like the invasion armada that stands between England and France and fills the skies above. 11,000 planes, 4,000 ships, and thousands of smaller craft are in action. And when the invasion was only hours old, the good news came through that we have seized beachheads which threaten the whole Normandy Peninsula, and a rail line that runs right into Paris. The British radio says that we have a firm grip on two beachheads and that Allied formations are advancing inland possibly as much as 10 miles. Meantime, the German DNB news agency has admitted dolefully that American tanks have been put ashore in at least one sector. D-Day and H-Hour arrived between the hours of 6 and 8:15 a.m. Western European time, which is between midnight and 2:15 Eastern wartime here in the United States. It was at that hour that land forces under command of General Montgomery began moving ashore along the Normandy coast in the Le Havre-Cherbourg area. As a prelude, the Royal Air Force staged a shattering 1,300 plane attack, and naval guns poured their heavy fire against Nazi strong points. A short time later, great forces of our airborne troops began dropping out of planes behind the enemy lines. In a speech to the House of Commons, Prime Minister Churchill declared, "Obstacles which were constructed in the sea have not proved so difficult as it was apprehended. The fire of the shore batteries has been largely quelled. Mass airborne landings have been successfully effected behind enemy lines, and landings on the beaches are proceeding at various points at the present time." Mr. Churchill, once more resuming the role of a war reporter, told members that he couldn't concentrate on any particular details, and the reason was the reports were coming in much too fast. He said, however, that operations are proceeding according to plan, and then he added, "What a plan." One result of that plan was that an hour after the first of the American, British, and Canadian troops hit the beaches, we had complete mastery of the skies over the landing area, and enemy shore batteries had been silenced for the most part. And because of these factors, our boys are now splashing ashore in the face of little resistance, correspondents say. Yes, the reports are really pouring in this noon, so let's run down the line and see what various quarters have to say. Most of the early news of the invasion, you know, came not from Allied spokesmen, but from the frantic Nazis crouching behind their coastal defenses. So first, let's examine Berlin's side of the story, her claims, and even more important, the things that Berlin admits this noon. The Berlin radio announced some time ago that the Allies have succeeded in getting landing barges into two estuaries behind the Atlantic Wall, and that they've gained footholds on several islands in the channel, including Guernsey and Jersey. These landing barges were reported to have pushed into the estuaries of the Orne and the Vira rivers in the coastal stretch between Cherbourg and Le Havre. And the Nazi broadcasts acknowledge that Allied tanks have ranged several kilometers inland between the towns of Caen and Isigny. But Berlin's most important admission is that the Allies have penetrated 10 miles inland. Other German reports include one from the Trans-Ocean News Agency, claiming that a large Allied warship had been set ablaze in the Seine estuary by artillery fire. Another saying that at least four Anglo-American airborne divisions, including glider troops, have attacked the French coast between Le Havre and Cherbourg. And a third stating that further Allied reinforcements are being landed by sea and air along the Seine, and that a naval battle is raging in the channel north of Le Havre. And now for the reports coming out of Allied headquarters. The first communique came from our own leaders at 3:32 a.m. Eastern wartime. It was an epic of simplicity, considering the momentous message it carried. The communique said, "Under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces supported by strong air forces began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France." We can readily see that a lot was left unsaid in that communique, particularly the scene of our invasion. It was not learned until some time later that the focal point of our attacks was the Normandy Peninsula, which juts out from France 100 miles below the English south coast, and then hour by hour the picture became clearer. We apparently were concentrating most of our weight against this peninsula from Cherbourg, at its tip, to Le Havre, at the mouth of the Seine. That's 110 miles northwest of Paris. Next, we received a report of Allied casualties, and that report contained good news. For it said that casualties among our airborne troops descending on France have been light. And then we received further details on the operations. For instance, we were told that more than 640 naval guns ranging from 4 inches to 16-inch weapons were supporting the ground troops, and that hundreds of minesweepers manned by 10,000 officers and men were moving up and down the channel. And after examining these news highlights from the headquarters of both sides, you will note that the first mighty blows of the invasion have been directed at one section, the Normandy coast of France. But there are hints at this hour that new additional operations may come momentarily. Other invasion forces from the great arsenal of the British Isles may spill out into other quarters of Europe, notably Holland. Now, the first hint that the Netherlands may be slated next for invasion came from an Allied headquarters spokesman this morning. He broadcast urgent instructions to the people of Holland, warning them to flee inland immediately to a distance of 21 miles and to keep off the highways, the railways, and the bridges. The people of occupied France also received last-minute instructions. They were told that the Allied air forces have adopted a new manner of attack and that they will be given advanced warnings to leave their towns and cities before the mighty bomber fleets arrive overhead. General Eisenhower himself also had words of instruction and encouragement for the oppressed peoples under Hitler's domination. The Supreme Commander told them that the hour of your liberation is approaching. He called on organized resistance groups to follow his previously issued instructions. but he cautioned the rest of the people to continue their passive resistance until he gave them the signal to rise and strike at the hated Nazis. To his own soldiers, hardened and toughened by months of training, General Eisenhower had these words to say. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessings of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking. Meanwhile, the Allied Fifth Army in Italy has advanced about 5 miles beyond the Tiber River, and it's driving the Germans in disordered retreat along a 17-mile front from Rome to the sea. On the Russian front, the Germans continue their futile assaults on the Soviet lines around Yashin, Romania, attempting to throw the coming Red Offensive off balance. And over on the other side of the world, General MacArthur's forces are still driving ahead on Biak Island off New Guinea toward the Machmer Aerodrome. Incidentally, Washington has given us a word picture of the typical American doughboy as he raced ashore in France this morning. And the gist of it is that he is by far the best-equipped fighting man ever to go into battle. The average hard-hitting Yank was, in fact, a walking arsenal. He carried nothing but weapons, ammunition, and a single day's compact food ration. But what weapons they were! For our equipment consisted of torpedoes for cutting the Nazis' elaborate barbed wire entanglements. And there were grenades, the famous Garand rifles, Browning automatics, and rocket guns, not to mention bazookas, flamethrowers, and demolition charges. Yes, the hard work of millions of Americans here at home will be reflected now on these mighty weapons of invasion. Donald Nelson, chairman of the War Production Board, says much of the equipment being hurled at the Germans this noon consists of weapons which the public has never seen or even heard of. And as the invasion got underway, an American correspondent rode in a plane watching the assault. And here is what he saw. No man's land is 5,000 feet below. It's somewhere between the gray channel washed beaches on which Allied troops are swarming from their landing barges and the brown fields beyond. The wink of gun flashes and the half-light of dawn in those fields comes from Germans fighting the invasion. And as we wheel off the targets and we streak back toward the channel, dawn streaks the eastern sky. Peering down, you can see our troops scrambling ashore under a canopy of shells hurled over their heads by warships in a harbor that dents the shoreline. In the half-light, we can see the flashes from German shore batteries all along the coastline and inside the harbor. By now, as we fly across the white-capped channel, we have a bridge of ships from England to France. They range from mighty battle wagons to tiny, gnat-like PT boats, and they include all manner of transports and landing craft. Yes, this is D-Day, H hour indeed. Our sponsors, the makers of Sure Gel, America's fastest-selling powdered pectin product, allowed us today to dispense with our regular commercial announcements. This is Ted Collins inviting you to join us again tomorrow when Kate Smith speaks.
The Homemaker's Quiz. Question:
what is the practical, everyday way for me to help guard the health of my family?
Answer: one way is to see that your family gets the sleep they need. If you know that the caffeine in coffee disturbs someone, serve Sanka coffee, which is 97% caffeine-free. Sanka's real coffee. Delicious, satisfying coffee. It comes to you roaster fresh in a vacuum-sealed jar. So buy it today at your grocer's. Sanka coffee.
King George VI of England will speak at 3 p.m. Eastern Wartime and President Roosevelt at 10 p.m. Eastern Wartime tonight. Keep tuned to your Columbia station for the latest news. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.